I'd like to call the meeting. Well, before I call the meeting to order, can I have a roll call, Sarah, please, so we know whether we looks like we do have a quorum, but let's get the roll call.
All right, so 6:03. Ron Sherman.
Present.
Dan Lauber. Not on the call. Debbie Frederick.
Here.
Jim Flanagan. Come back to him. Lydia Manning.
I'm here.
Barbara Merle.
Here.
Helen Kwan.
Here.
Chairperson Vasquez.
Here.
And Jim, we know that you're, we see you, sort of. Jeff's here.
Okay. So thank you. Thank you all then. I'm calling the meeting to order. And then of course, our first agenda item, Sarah, do we have anybody from the public either submitted written comments to you?
No.
No, okay. And looking at least from what the participants, it looks like there are nobody else that is here for making public, well, to even listen, let alone make public comment.
That's correct.
And then if you can do me a giant favor, Sarah, or whoever, if you see Dan join in, we can acknowledge him for the record as he joins in. Okay. Yep. All right, then. The first item then on the agenda would be then the approval of the meeting minutes for last month, on August 11th, 2021. I'd like a motion to approve the minutes in a second.
I'll motion to approve.
Okay. Do you have a second, please?
A second here.
Okay. Are there any, is there any discussion, comments, amendments, modifications?
No, I think the minutes captured everything perfectly.
Okay. Then if that's the case, then can we have a roll call, Sarah, for the approval?
Ron Sherman.
Approve.
Dan is absent. Debbie Frederick.
Approve.
Jim Flanagan.
Approve.
Lydia Manning.
I approve.
Barbara Merle.
Approve.
Ellen Kwan.
Approve.
And Chairperson Vasquez.
Approve. The next item on the agenda is, Lydia, do you have any update on the Dementia Friendly group?
We convened, the date is escaping me, I guess August 23rd, actually that Monday. And so we've revitalized our efforts. We are hoping to hold an in-person training at the Sheraton in the middle of October. They've agreed to host, where we will be inviting businesses and organizations to attend to have their businesses and or organizations certified as dementia friendly. So we'll have more information as we continue to plan that I can share with the committee, but we've revitalized efforts and we're moving forward, and we will be collaborating with Oak Park and in a fashion that we will see as it emerges moving forward.
Olivia, when's the event at the Sheraton?
We are deciding between two different dates. We're looking at, I believe, October 14th and October 15th. And so we just need to solidify that and commit and get information out.
Dan Lauber is trying to join.
Oh.
Looks like he's in the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Dan?
Yeah. I'm in now.
Okay.
First attempt to join took me to somebody's meeting somewhere else. It's very strange.
Oh, wow. Okay. Did you get any good scoop for us, or I'm just teasing? So let the record reflect, Dan. We just approved the board meeting minutes from last month. Lydia gave a very brief update on the dementia friendly group. And I have no updates from the MMC. They were originally supposed to be scheduled for September, But based on the Labor Day holiday, it caused too many people to, basically they weren't gonna show up. So we weren't gonna have a group to attend. So we're moving it to October. And so I will have an update for you at the next month for that. Then takes us back to old business. And so I'd like to, we have a discussion of the sample surveys and testing questions. So at this point, I'd like to open up the discussion and see, and I don't know, Jim, if you wanna give us your at least preliminary thoughts on since you were kind enough to do the evaluation and summary of the responses.
We get 14 responses on the second go round. Again, most all of them were completed in under 10 minutes. Between 10 and 13 of them believed that the survey was understandable. There were no problems with it. And only a few people actually used the optional comment sections. So obviously it's a small number that we're looking at, but you know, I was nothing glaring came up. Some of the same, you know, comments before. We had one comment about neither disagree or agree kind of language on the scale that we were using. But again, I think you're always going to have that one person out of so many that either doesn't read the instructions properly or can't find that not applicable box. Okay. You know, so, you know, I think, you know, all in all, we got some comments too about the purpose of the survey, the front end, you know, that statement that we have on there, maybe, you know, it needs to be, I guess, Deanne addressed some of this before. There's a letter from the mayor that will go out, or the village president, and then the survey will go with another cover letter. And then we've got language on the front of it. So maybe that's addressed, you know, through those processes. Dan, were you able to get any information from David Orr?
Yeah, the information I was able to get, and it wasn't from David Orr, because as he explained to me, when he was county clerk, he had people to do everything for him. So, I mean, he barely knows how to use a cell phone. There are, from the county clerk's office, there are 8,516 registered voters in River Forest. This is where it gets interesting. And I should tell you, I've got our village, River Forest Township clerk checking on this. The 2020 census says there's 11,717 people living in River Forest. It doesn't break it down by age yet. The last American Community Survey basically said that 73.4% of River Forest residents were 18 or older, which means that if that rate still holds, there's about 8,600 individuals 18 or older in River Forest, which means we have an extraordinarily high voter registration rate.
Should note that people are trying to join us by audio. Do you see that, Sarah? Karina Davis?
Yes.
Yeah, it looks like we just have someone, a resident, just joining the meeting to listen in.
Okay.
Yep, she is a member of the Zoning Board of Appeals, I believe. So, you know, if the township clerk is able to confirm that 8,516 is the number of registered voters, you know, we're looking at a voter registration list that would certainly represent the universe of people who adults in River Forest. She's also going to look into, and I've left a phone message with someone at the county clerk's office, because they do try to avoid having live people answer the phones. Not as bad as the state of Illinois, but not good. They have a list that they can provide in electronic form to governments for government purposes, which this would qualify, that would have the voter's name, their address, and in most cases, their age. Overwhelming number of cases, their age. So that would certainly give us an ability to generate a random sample from that pretty easily at virtually no cost.
Great.
What village official needs to make that request?
Well, I imagine either Sarah or the village administrator would, but right now we're getting, our township clerk is checking on this and I've got the call in to find out if we can get it and exactly what it would be called, but we should be able to get that data. Takes about three, I think they say allow 3 days.
Okay. And Dan, is that through like a Freedom of Information request or is it more? Okay.
Just a request.
So Dan, is that just people who have voted then? So we're missing that like 20% who haven't or so?
No, it's registered voters.
Okay.
And Rez, we can barely see you.
Oh, you know, sorry. I took my laptop really quick and put it there. Sorry about that. Thank you for pointing that out. Okay.
Yeah. So then, Dan, how many requests would you mail?
I would. I don't see any reason to go for more than 300. We were able to do with Naperville a population 10 times the size of ours. We did a sample of about 365 households.
So 300, and would we do like three mailings? Letter from the president.
An initial letter, which I'd prefer, it'd be best if it came from the whole village board. We were going to do the whole village board in Naperville, but it was too much of a hassle to gather everyone's signature electronically, especially back then when people didn't have, weren't as sophisticated with computers. But it could come from the village president or it could come from the whole village board. That would be an initial letter. Then there would be a mailing of the survey, a postcard reminder a week or 10 days later, a second mailing of the survey to those who hadn't responded, and a postcard reminder, and then a third survey to those who haven't responded. The way you do it is on the return envelope, you give them a pre-printed return envelope with a department number on it. That everyone's assigned a department number, and when it comes in, you take them off the list. You mark them as having responded, then you take the survey out and put it in the pile. So you never put the survey together with the name, but that way you don't go keep sending surveys to someone who's responded.
Dan, so, if you sent out, how many did you send out and what was your response? How many responses did you get?
You got a 65% response rate in Naperville.
So you had like 200 or so?
Close to 200, yeah. That gave us a margin of error of less than 5%.
So who in Village Hall is doing all of this work?
Well, either village staff is going to have to do it or we're going to have to do it. I don't know. Rez is going to have
I guess I'll determine that now. I think one of the other questions we got to deal with is, for example, the SurveyMonkey, I understand is so, and we're going to send out hard copies, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, we talked about also individuals, even though they get the hard copy, they can go in and submit the responses electronically through the SurveyMonkey. Am I correct? As long you as they... as long as they use that code.
Rez, you could do that if you want to spend time putting together a survey on SurveyMonkey. I think that we're perfectly safe and sound having mailed responses only. That will yield...
I have to disagree, Dan.
Well...
I mean, if you do a SurveyMonkey, which I've done pretty much 900 of now, you're going to get about a 45 to 58% range of response rate. And at the 58%, I'm okay with that.
So would SurveyMonkey require that that number, that department number?
Yeah, you'd have to have people put in a department number.
Yes, it would.
But I would bet you that Well, a huge proportion of people will be much more comfortable doing it on paper.
Okay. Well, I'm talking about seniors. Dan, you may be more comfortable, but I'm not sure most people are.
And I'm not excluding people filling out the hard copies, but I was allowing people to do the electronic version. Going back, it's my understanding, I am not the expert on SurveyMonkey. I'll disclose that right now. But I thought people inputting the information on SurveyMonkey, we would be able to produce reports or something along those lines.
Absolutely.
Relating to the responses. And I don't know, I'll look at Sarah, I'll look at Ron, since he had experience during that survey, doing SurveyMonkey, that would be what would be helpful. So if you wanna, I guess, query how many, you know, answered this on the question, I'm guessing, we'll be able to receive that versus, I guess, looking at the hard copies or
I have no problem, Rez. I have no problem with doing both.
Okay.
Making SurveyMonkey available. Just, I would beg to disagree with Ron that I think among seniors, the odds on bet is that a hard copy will be the preferred response rate, but it really doesn't matter what the preferred response rate is as long as we get the survey back.
Right.
I don't care how they
say Dan, down to age 45.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm sorry, one at a time. I'm going to go with Jim and then with Ron. So
doesn't our survey go down to age 45?
Yes, it
does. I don't know. What did we finally decide?
Yeah.
45.
Correct.
Are we sure we really want to go that low?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we can differentiate. We can segment and stratify. I have a question with the survey. I have a question for the data gathering and synthesis. First question is, SurveyMonkey gives you different capabilities when you pay a fee for it and you get it free. And if we're going to have to compile data both from SurveyMonkey and from hard copies, we probably want to be able to get the data in our hands from SurveyMonkey, which is not a free issue. So and we also can't draw correlations and stuff from the SurveyMonkey. They do the reporting. So I just think that's something we need to think about.
Okay, and let me go back to Ron and then Jim.
So I set up the Villages SurveyMonkey survey account 12 years ago. So the Village has a paid account. And Jim, you raised your hand. What do you want to say?
Well, I think ultimately everything's got to be put into a digital form.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then SurveyMonkey does allow us to download into Excel all the data.
Right.
If we can get everything into Excel, then it can be input to SPSS and properly analyzed.
Good.
By an academic third party who knows how to use SPSS. And that's truly, I mean, you could do regression analysis, two-tail tests. Dr. Manning, you could chime in, but that is the state-of-the-art modeling software that we use in any type of academic research that we do.
And it costs money. I mean, I just think, you know, we just have to make sure we have a budget. Licenses are, you know, they're costly.
Okay.
One of those fellows who spoke to us from Austin apparently had quite a bit of experience with SPSS.
Well, I keep going back to a fellow colleague at Concordia that's pretty well versed in it. I think that's why I was driving it. If we could get a feel for postage and the number of mailings, there's your budget line item, you know, little production cost to put the print material together. That's pretty limited. And then the last piece would be analysis of the data. I don't think the analysis would cost more than $500 or $1,000, you know, in terms of, you know, like how many hours, the number, because again, we as a committee can go through the preliminary analysis of what we want the reports to show, the correlations that we're interested in, the rundown, so that person doesn't have to think through that. They can then say, well, of the people that lived in this type of blah, 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 how did they answer question 42 and 37? That's really going to be where the valuable data comes from. You know, so ultimately then the question I have, Dan, are we
could do a lot of that with pivot tables too. I mean, we could do a lot of it on Excel too.
Barbara, can you do that or no?
I haven't done it for, you know, a few years, but I used to, yeah.
I have no idea how to do it, but I know how to get this stuff out of SPSS. And I know people that can do it. So that's like, to me, half the battle, you know. I'm sure there's other... I mean, there's other SPSS competitive software.
No, I was just saying, as a committee with our Excel spreadsheet, we can find out a lot that we can then feed into the analyst from SPSS. Just okay. There's more to use in Excel than just the straight columns and rows.
Okay. Now, so, Sarah, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're looking at three mailings. Did I get that correctly?
Actually,
or
one, two, three, four or five. Two being postcard, one being a letter, and the survey twice.
Okay.
And the advance letter. Yeah. You got the advance letter. Yeah.
I got the advance letter.
Yeah. Okay.
Village board, then a survey, then a postcard reminder, then a second survey. With a postcard reminder.
Yeah. So, and the surveys will be have a cover letter on them.
Correct. Survey. But it's one mailing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one mailing. That's the way I'm looking at it. It's one mailing. So I have numbers.
Yes.
And that's what I was going to ask. So the first mailing that goes out is the cover letter explaining the basis for this and what it needs, et cetera, with the hard copy survey. Is that correct? Or am I? Okay.
No, the first letter is a letter letting them know they're part of a very important sample and how important it is that they fill it out and they're going to get it in about a week.
Okay.
And then you have a cover letter with the first survey, a postcard reminder about 7 to 10 days later. And about 2 or 3 weeks after the first survey, you send out the second, you allow 2 weeks for a response, I think. And then you send out the third and that's it.
Okay.
And we have to use first class postage. The people will not be as likely to open it without first class postage. And we'd be very prudent to have printed on the envelope, you know, important River Forest service, select sample River Forest service, something that tells them what they're getting and that, you know, gives a hint of how important it is. That reporting can be worked out later.
So again, I think it's easy to budget when you say a maximum of 300 pieces mailed five times is $1,548 first class, $750 for postage. There's going to be 1,500 pre-printed envelopes. And then we have to look at how they would actually print the survey, you know, and what that would cost.
Yeah. It'll be actually fewer mailings because the number
they will reduce each time, with each but iteration. For budgetary purposes, right. I can't make an estimate to get the reduction to go from 2 to 3. It's inconsequential from a dollar standpoint. So survey print cost and then analysis. Because I guess we need to move forward quickly with the estimated budget to actually get the wheels turning on all this.
Right.
Right.
Correct.
I would be happy to volunteer to help get these mailings done and out with staff I have and, you know, local resources. You know, I mean, I can get a couple of estimates from local printers just on printing 1,500. You know, I guess these would have to go in. Dan, you're shaking your head no. And you
you're not going to print. You don't want to print 1,500 surveys.
No, I'd want to print 600 surveys.
Six to seven or 800. Yeah, that's the range.
Okay. And I need 1,500 envelopes. Not really. I'm using it as a baseline. I understand there's going to be two postcard mailings. I need a 6x9 envelope for the survey, a number 10 envelope for the initial letter. All that does is reduce cost. So I can get that estimate. I can pull that estimate together and get it to the committee, you know, within a few days, within a week or so.
Okay.
You know, and then we could reach out to our colleague and see what he would want for some analysis, if we were interested in that, just to know that number. And then, you know, then I think if we're good on that, then we just need to make sure that we're, you know, we're comfortable with the actual questions on the survey itself.
Okay, Jim, let me, oh, go ahead, Dan. I was gonna
ask. I was just gonna say, in accord with the village's diversity, inclusion and equity policies, we should probably offer the opportunity to or get estimates from the fellow from Austin who addressed us, who does SPSS as well. That way we will not have a presumably all white group of vendors that we're looking at.
So you're saying get a proposal, Dan, from
more than... You had two guys speak to us from Austin who had done some surveying, and one of them had said he had quite a bit of experience with SPSS.
Okay.
And I think that he should have an opportunity to submit a proposal as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that, Dan. He wasn't a printer or a surveyor, and...
I wouldn't have any problem just reaching out and seeing if he's
maybe he's got some resources
and capable of it. I do recall him saying something like that. Okay. You know, like, you know, okay. they've used SPSS. I have no dog in the fight. I don't, you know, if somebody says, yeah, oh no, I'm very capable of doing that, and he'll do it for $250. That's fine with me.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, true. Yeah, good point.
All right, so Jim, you can follow up with that, but. The other question I have is, number one, if we do get hard copy responses, well, first of all, where do you see, and you meaning the whole group, where the hard copy responses will be submitted to?
Village.
The village or?
Village.
Yeah, okay, that's what I want. I just assumed that, but I just wanted to be clear. And then, so when the village collects the hard copies, who's going to help input, I'm assuming the hard copy, someone has to input that into, I'm not sure if that's the Excel or that's in the survey, the Survey Monkey inputs, how are we going to collect the hard copy information and to put it into electronic?
We have to have a develop a coding system, using the same coding system as SurveyMonkey does, and then we would enter it into spreadsheets, which we combine with what we get from SurveyMonkey.
That doesn't answer the question about who's going to do it.
Well, in most jurisdictions, the staff would do it. Sorry,
okay, sir. So we have one staff member on with us.
Right. But
it sounds like the perfect place for me.
Okay. And yeah, and I'll help out too. I mean, in terms of what we're talking about.
I'll just, help out too.
Yeah, input. So if we get hard copies, we'll start inputting it. I'm assuming the SurveyMonkey, is
yep.
that the way?
Yep.
We obviously have to keep track of the code.
Department number.
Thank you, whatever the number is. So we make sure it's only being entered once, right?
Right.
Okay. And then I see Barb's hand up.
This is just an out there suggestion, but I think the Oak Park River Forest technology has like student service hours that they need. And that might be a good person who could do some data entry.
Wow.
Yes.
Good idea.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's right. So that's the high school you're talking about?
I think so. I mean, if you want, I'll call there and find out. I can
do that. If you can do that, that'd be great. Because okay. We get students to help input that information, that'd be great.
And they get credit, so that's good.
Okay,
go ahead. If I read about this in the newspaper and I want to take a survey, I'm a 64-year-old River Forest resident for over 30 years. Can I call the village and get a department number and take the survey or no?
No, that wrecks a random sample survey. You start getting self-selected respondents, and we do not want self-selected respondents.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. All right, so the 300 will be coming out of that list that you're gonna, Dan, hopefully will be able to get from the David Orr, so to speak, or whoever he's recommending, right?
Well, the current county clerk.
County clerk, okay. Okay, and you're gonna get that information, what it's called, and so if we make the inquiry, okay. All right,
So if I can just clarify so that I understand. We'll send out, we'll do the mailing, and the mailing will include some unique identifier, some code, so that the responses can remain anonymous. And I'm happy to do this part, put the survey on SurveyMonkey and just kind of copy paste it into there. And then they'll need to use that unique identifier on SurveyMonkey as well. All the survey responses will eventually get into SurveyMonkey. And then that we will use that as the database, I guess, for all the responses.
Yeah, I suppose we could either have committee members input it in the SurveyMonkey or just input it into a spreadsheet and combine it with the SurveyMonkey spreadsheet. That's something we don't have to decide right now, but
I would put it in the SurveyMonkey.
Yeah.
Not try to mesh technology, not try to do it two ways, do it one way. One download of information, that's it.
So then my recommendation would be, just so that it all lines up with SurveyMonkey, right? The first question on the survey is just the unique identifier.
Department number.
So that. Yeah. Right. So then that's like kind of question one, because if anybody is filling it out online and that ends up being like the last question and they don't know where it
will be the first. Yeah.
So we can renumber the questions, you know, once everything's all approved, but I just want to make sure that's number one is the whatever the unique identifier is.
Yeah. And you don't have to number the questions. You can simply have it. The first thing they put in is the department number or whatever we're going to call it. It doesn't have to be a numbered question.
Okay. So the questions stay the same number. It's just the first field will be that asking for that information.
Yeah.
And actually, No. You don't ask for any information up front. With SurveyMonkey, the number, the identifying number is the first thing that shows up.
Okay.
And the answerer does not have a choice about it. So when they start the survey and then complete it, it's done with their own self-identified number.
Right, Ron, but that's if they're doing it from a link where you've assigned them a number, they're going to be doing it from a printed survey where they're given a number. We're not sending everybody, emailing people links.
Correct. So when they go into SurveyMonkey, if they're doing it by paper, they're going to have printed on there, because when you print them out, you're going to get a separate number. Mm-hmm. You'll get sequential numbers.
So I'm envisioning it as like instead of write your name here, you write your identifying number here, and it'll be like through 300 or something. I know SurveyMonkey does assign respondent IDs or something.
Yes. I'm not sure
if that's what you're talking about. We can ignore those though, because that'll just muddy everything up. But the unique identifier number can be all of the printed copies. And then people will just need to have that number if they fill it out online. Then they can just input that, and then tracking everything will be able to go into, you know, the mailing list or whatever, and cross out, hey, this person, this has already responded, things like that.
Now, is there any way, and I don't know whether the village could do this, is there any way that people could, you know, where they're going to get the mailing and then they sign on to the village, maybe our particular site, and they get a link there to it. They enter their name and they enter their ID number linked to the survey, and then they just go there instead of needing to bring it all over, you know, with a piece of paper in front of them to that. I mean, it's easy to do rfv.gov, easier than SurveyMonkey. But I'm just wondering whether we could create something on the web that does that.
Well, let me, besides answering that, but should we is the question. Should we do it that way? And I'm looking at some faces that, and I'm not saying we should not. I'm just looking, is that, should we do something like that before we answer whether we can or can't?
Barb, I think that would make, we'd have to preload the names.
Right.
And I'm not sure we're going to be able to do that.
It's a lot of programming. It's a lot of, I don't know, the capability of the systems enough to, you know, that how it then creates the individual identifier, like from that database. I'm sure somebody could write a program to do it. I don't know what it would take to do it. I don't think it's, you know, I've got no problem putting in number 842. It's going to be from 500 to 800, or, you know, a three-digit number, or, you know, a four-digit number. It doesn't have to be 10 digits.
I'm just thinking of the link that's the SurveyMonkey that's got the SurveyMonkey plus the number. And if you don't have your piece of paper in front of you, you can't get onto the SurveyMonkey.
No, you can't.
I think, I mean, we can buy a URL. It doesn't have to be letter, 10 numbers or anything like that. That's not a big deal. I think that in order to make sure that it continues to be the random sample, I don't know that we put it on the college website.
You're right.
And I'm going to ask this sort of a silly question because I don't know, but does an identifier have to have, you know, specific characters, or is it all just a simple, you know, three-digit number for 1 through 300, or, you know, I'm just curious about that.
Like, Rez, it could be whatever we want. The simplest thing is just make it three digits called, and we have to come up, when we do it solely by mail, when you do it solely by mail, you simply put, all you do is you put it on the return envelope. It'd be Village of River Forest Apartment 301, and we know who's sent it. We mark them off in the database so they don't get another mailing. When you do it on SurveyMonkey, it gets a little trickier. We'll have to come up with something else to call the number. And obviously, we don't have to figure that out right now, but it's something we can think about.
Oh, I think it could be the same number, just so that, you know, we know, like, okay, number 301, oh, they filled it out on SurveyMonkey. Number 302, they mailed it back in.
Yeah, we just got to figure out what we call it, because we don't want people to think this is going to enable us to identify the result. No, we could call it, we still could call it on SurveyMonkey, you still could say the department number. Department number. Call whatever you want, but we just got to maintain consistency.
So,
Rez, if you want to put your initials in it, that's okay.
Just we haven't finalized the survey questions.
Yeah.
And Barbara had several suggestions late today that I think we should consider. So we can finalize the survey. I think we figured out how to send it out in several different ways, but we need to move on here.
Right.
Can I give some background on where I came from with those questions and why I thought of those? I looked at some of the survey results, the latest ones, and there was one, I think it was PDF3 that answered, let me see if I can bring it. I'm never going to get it, but it answered that they did not modify. They would not modify. That was not applicable, and they did not want to modify from some other ways. And then I started thinking, then I started looking at everybody else's, and some would modify, some wouldn't. And then I looked at the zoning map of River Forest to see how things are zoned right now. And then I looked at the land use chart. And that tells you what's permitted use, what's special use, what's prohibited use, and what's planned development required based on those specified zones. And so there's a number of things that are prohibited for a lot of places that are single family residences. And so I began thinking that this is very specific in terms of our use of responses to actually have some influence in the village if we're talking about the policies and procedures and processes that might facilitate modifications. And so I started looking also at the zoning appeals committee and the kinds of things that have been appealed. You know, and I just saw a couple. One was, you know, putting in an HVAC system, and another was building up to a two-story system as something that needed special processes. And going through a whole procedure and taking a long time, actually, you know, so it was like a year and a half between when somebody submitted and they actually started work on it. So all those things I saw as issues that seniors would be concerned about. And I started thinking, is there a way of framing the question so that our responses can kind of match to what the policies and procedures look at? And so that's where I changed some of them to, let me look and see my questions. Hold on.
Share my screen, I've got them.
Oh, okay, thank you. Okay. So I thought, two things I thought of were that there are these definite requirements and procedures and policies and restrictions and ways of appealing. And just asking people if they know about that, you know, if they're thinking of modifications, do they know about any of these things? So the first question asks that. The last one asks whether they would be likely to do modifications if they knew more about them. Because, you know, a result of our responses could be that there's a streamlining of procedures or education aspects. So those are two of the two framing questions, top and bottom. And the other ones were, you know, the need for accessibility. We have a question like that already, and that usually doesn't require a permit of any kind. And then instead of saying that I would consider modifying, I kind of introduced like, I can imagine a situation where I would be willing to modify. And so it's not saying that I would do it now, but that I could see in my own life, there's some situation when I would be willing to do this to my house. And those were the kinds of things that require village approval that I put there. And then, so those are not infrastructure, not like fixing my chimney, you know, but some of the other things like building up, extending, putting in a ramp. And then another one would be to construct additional habitable spaces. So instead of calling them granny houses or whatever, it's all the same kind of thing. If you want to put plumbing and electricity in a garage, or you want to build your own little house and do that on it, you know, you would still, it at least gives you the entree into the category that the zoning department seems to divide things into. So that was just, those are my thoughts on that. And honestly, I don't have enough background in the zoning department here to know all the nuances of it, but this was just my first crack, just to see whether that seemed to make sense to other people, or we could just leave things as they are.
Barbara, I have two thoughts. One was to keep the bullets 1, 2, and 4. I think the rest are a little much to ask. But I also think that if we substituted them, what was it, for 54 through 59, that would probably work for me.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I think so, yeah.
Hey, I think we need a little review of the zoning procedures. One, if you want to build a ramp, you're going to need a building permit, Barbara. And the only reason, if you want to add a second story to your house, you're going to need a building permit, but you're not necessarily going to the Zoning Board of Appeals. You only go to the Zoning Board of Appeals if you need a variation from the standards in the zoning ordinance. So you want to have a shorter backyard, you want to change the floor area ratio of the house. It's if you're getting a variation from what the zoning code requires, nor does it take a year and a half necessarily to do it. I had one client, we initially contacted the village in August. We had approval by January and or December. I can guarantee you that if you get 1% of the people to say they're familiar with the contact of the village requirements, procedures, and approval processes for modifying residences and property, I'd be astounded. I understand what you're trying to do here, but it's not, I don't think this is appropriate for this kind of a survey. You're going into minutiae that is different from us trying to find out if the village is age friendly.
And I hear what you're saying, and I don't know the zoning nuances, and that's fine, you know, and I'm just saying a building permit is still an approval from the village somehow and needing to get that. So I was just trying to map our questions to the responses potential effect. Okay. And I didn't see that with the ones that we have right now. I'm not trying to be minutia, but I think the ones we have are kind of broad that it wouldn't speak to an action item of some kind that could come from it. So I'm trying to get a balance between those two. And this might not be the right wording of it and stuff, but that's my strategy is to make sure that we have an objective. I mean, if our objective is only to say we qualify as age-friendly because we have this kind of response, you know, without a correlation or anything else, you know, but just to say we check the boxes of age-friendliness because we have X number of people who have answered this kind of thing, then that's okay. I just didn't think that was our only objective. I thought our objective was to influence municipal actions.
Yeah, which is what the survey does. I mean, if you get lots of people wanting to, with say 48 and 49 and 50, wanting to have ADUs, which we'll call them ADUs. We wouldn't call them that in the survey because no one's gonna know what they're talking about. That would suggest that the zoning should be amended to allow them, as was recommended by the comprehensive affordable housing plan, which of course Frank Martin, the ZBA, rejected out of hand and has stalled completely. So that would give ammunition for that. But all the stuff that's in the survey, whether I like the question or not, they do provide for us making an evaluation as to how age friendly the village is and the policies the village might want to adopt in order to make it more age friendly. You know, the questions you have, well, I'll be honest, I like some of the questions. They're really go beyond the scope of what the survey's trying to do. And I don't think that they would necessarily, you know, I mean, if the need arises, I'm willing to modify my house. Yeah, it's great. But we're asking if they want to, if their home is accessible to them now. And if that's really the big question.
All right, there's a big question. So that's the reason my wife and I are going to be moving. Our house is not accessible to us now with two floors and a basement. And so the whole ADU thing, at least in my neighborhood here, it's not going to happen. There's nowhere to build them.
What do you need? A single story house?
Yes.
And that's very hard to do in River Forest.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. That's why we're moving to Albuquerque.
That's a long way to get away from our zoning.
But Barb,
I guess I see what you're saying, Dan. I would consider modifying my property to create a separate living space for a caregiver or boarder. Fine, do it. It has nothing to do with the city. Okay. That's fine. It doesn't have an action item that could be, you know, I'm going to make a new bedroom for somebody, Okay, that doesn't tell me, it doesn't, this is where it is like almost too broad to me. I would consider modifying my property to create a designated space for another adult, an in-law suite or a freestanding small unit. Those are such two different things that they would also, again, what are you gonna tell the city? They're gonna say, well, they can do an in-law suite, we don't care. But a freestanding unit is something else. And now we're talking about ADUs, but I don't know which one they're thinking about on that question. They can't
do it under the current zoning.
An in-law suite?
The ordinance has to be amended to permit that.
For an in-law suite?
Yes.
What do you think of when you think of an in-law suite?
Setting a second living, establishing a second living unit in the building, in the house.
I mean, I was looking for houses and there was a place that had a bedroom and a bathroom that I wouldn't have used at like that, but I would consider modifying some of what I was doing, maybe knock down a wall to make that a suite. And I wouldn't need any kind of zoning thing for that. It was already in the house.
Okay, that's a little different than the ADU.
Well, yeah, but we're putting them together. So I'm just saying, the way that we have them right now, I don't see these are actionable items because they're broad. And you can't make an argument on that then. Because it's not specifying that.
Okay. Well,
I don't know what to say. This is an awfully late point to make major changes.
Okay, and that's fine. I'm just making my stand on this is the way I see it. And I see that it will take another go around to get at anything that would actually be an arguable case in the housing questions.
Okay. Okay. Well, does anybody else have any thoughts? I mean, about what Barbara's saying. Otherwise, the only reason why, Barbara, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, but yeah, we are at the nth hour here.
I understand.
We already sent out two versions of the survey pilot, so now changing it, I'm wondering, will that then require us to send out another set or just another one? Otherwise, you know, it's getting exhausting is what I'm saying.
No, I understand that. I do. I just think that it's a nice feel good survey instead of one that can have some teeth in it.
And that's, I guess, yeah.
I'm just making my comments on that.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But then this would also have turned into a much longer survey. And then would we get people to respond to it? Is the other discussions we've had here about the length of the number of questions and frankly, I understand where you're coming from, Barb, but at the same time, I'm also thinking that if I get responses, meaning one member of the village, get responses of people wanting to modify their properties, et cetera, I'm not expecting residents to know you have to go to zoning, you have to get a permit, just tell me what you're thinking of doing. And then we can figure out, well, they want to do this, they want to do that. And then we figure out whether, meaning on behalf of the village, whether we know what we need to look at to make those things happen as options. It's not to come up with an architectural design of how we're going to actually meet that individual's needs, but at least we have a good idea of what we're going to be needing to do for the village. And it's not stagnant. This is not a one-time thing that this is your only response and this is the only things we're going to do. I think it's just getting a big picture of what people are planning to do or would like to do in general. So I don't know if that helps, but okay. So I'm going back then to what are we, you know, for the surveys and the questions, because I know that was one issue. Are we ready to go with the current questions that we have based on what we sent out?
I think some of the comments that people added should be considered at least.
Okay. So
for example, just on the first, I went and combined all the surveys that Jim put together into a single file. But one of them on question 48 added, I would consider modifying my property to create a separate living space for a caregiver or boarder. And they put in parentheses with a question mark, parent. Maybe we should be adding the word caregiver, boarder, or parent. Because that would make sense.
Okay.
I don't think we have to retest that question if we added parent to it, but somebody suggested that in their response.
Is that different than in-laws?
Yeah.
Because I think they wrote that in and then didn't see the next question, which is the in-law suite.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, parents separate from an in-law.
I mean, how?
You're related directly to them biologically.
It's the same space,
but they may not be thinking.
Yeah, but then you assume that everybody's married, and that's not a safe assumption either, right? To have an in-law requires a marital component.
True.
Yeah, and then they, you know, in 54, someone added with the choices of with whom do you live? And they added live with spouse, and they added and children. And maybe we need to add to that in parentheses, including children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that might make sense. I mean, these people gave us some very helpful stuff. And in their optional part, they added, I would love to see the village allow plumbing in separate dwellings, et cetera, for aging parents to move into, either for our own parents or even for us. This person had all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, we said anybody whose comments were longer than the actual survey should be discounted. From a psychological evaluation perspective. Because I mean, nobody got time for that.
Now, oh, by the way, about 17% of River Forest is 65 or older.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Seems like a lot more. I just want to add, I think what Dan said about those questions is valid. Is I always say I'm kind of the regular person here, and I think when somebody adds that, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like parents really aren't in-laws and your kids do live with you. And I think those, it kind of almost makes it user-friendly.
I wouldn't have any problem with it.
I'm fine with that too. If everybody,
whoever knows who did that survey, please thank them.
Yeah.
Which question is that?
It was 40. Oh God, I'm losing it. Here, page 10. Okay. Page 48. I mean, question 48. I would consider modifying my property to create a separate living space for a caregiver, comma, a boarder, or parent.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then in 54, there was a choice, live. Actually, we could get a, okay. So we said with 54, check all that apply. And I guess we don't have to add children because you check live with child and live with spouse.
Yeah, right.
So they did it right. They just wanted to add something, which we don't have to, have to add that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Dan, are there any other comments that?
I'll freely admit I did not get to go through all the surveys. That was just pure luck stumbling on that one first. You know, some people gave us some very thorough comments, and I don't know Does anyone think we can really do anything with all those comments they gave us? The three people gave us a fair amount of comments. Like one of them asked, question 39 references township, not village. Is a survey about both? What is 39?
What's up?
Tom?
Oh, really?
Well, okay.
Wow. Yeah, that nobody else raised that. That you can ignore that point.
I'll have Sarah send you a link.
Okay. I see that.
Okay, I'll do it right now. Okay.
All right. So yeah, that one on the township here, we can ignore the comment.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the thing to do is, you know, we should all, before then, I mean, I think this is just about ready to go. I think though, you know, we should all take a little bit of time before the next meeting and just go through these and see if there might be any small refinements to any question that will make it a little bit more understandable or easier to answer. Let's just, you know, as an exercise, that might be.
Could I stop us for a minute?
Yeah.
Ron Sherman called me. He got kicked out of the meeting. Sarah, I don't know if you could send him another link. Mm-hmm. That's where he's at. He's trying to get in, but he can't get in.
You sure he's not in Albuquerque already?
Not in Albuquerque.
No. All right. No. Sarah's going to send it to him. Although I would assume it'd be the same link, though.
Yeah. Rez, how long will it take from when you go to the board to us being able to buy some stamps?
You know, I'm assuming it won't be that long. I'm, you know, from what I'd like to do, though, is if we're talking about the numbers we're talking about, I'm not even sure if it's going to be a formal board approval, or it's more like I'll give them an update. And there's a certain amount that we'll be able to probably go with. Sarah, I'm looking at you. Is there an amount I think the village administrator can move ahead with? Or
I mean, I think it as far as the mailing.
Yeah.
I don't remember what we said the number was, but
I think this budget could be less than $2,500.
Yeah.
I would hesitate to say that the any analysis from a third party would be approved, but I think that the mailing, there's no issue with the mailing.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the analysis of a third party, we would probably, that's over time of getting some proposals or something, right? Because we're going to need that.
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't know what the timing of that would be, but that's probably where the big issue.
Well, Rez, if you want to send me the contact information for those gentlemen or the one, your main contact, I'll reach out. I'll talk to them. I'll get the proposal.
Okay.
I'll get the proposal from the other guy at Concordia and make them available to the committee.
Okay. That sounds good. And Barb,
I have one more question about content. I wasn't here last time. And I know that two of the people that I talked to for the category of outdoor spaces and buildings, where it's the sidewalks are safe and all of that, they were really emphatic about the snow removal being an issue. And I wondered if you talked about that at all last time and you just decided not to add that, but they thought that should be called out.
Meaning they wanted snow removal, or did they say for it, against it, or?
They just said it was dangerous because it was packed up against the curbs. It was packed up against their driveways. They knew people that fell because of it. They were just really concerned about how icy it got. So, I mean, that's a safety issue. And that they didn't feel comfortable walking, and especially because everybody was walking all winter, because that was the only thing we could do during the pandemic. You know, that just really threw them because they didn't want to be in the street. It was icy and they couldn't cross over those curbs and they couldn't get out of their driveways. So, and I don't think that's called, I don't think that's addressed here at all.
Yeah, and some sidewalks don't get cleared like they should, like the requirement is. And I think that becomes an issue with people that are walking on sidewalks where some never get cleared.
And I think there was general questions regarding safety of walking and lighting, et cetera, but specifically about snow removal, I'm not sure if we did that. Yeah. But I don't know, what do people think? Then we didn't also specify, were there cracks in the sidewalk? Were there other impediments to the sidewalk? Were there, I mean, it was more of a general question for someone to tell me. And I'm assuming if I was a person talking about feelings about snow, I would answer, you know, specifically addressing that question, whether I disagree or agree to it.
I don't, I would have a hard one, because the question is, the sidewalks in my neighborhood are safe for me to use. That I don't even envision a snow in that. I don't. That I envision with the cracks. I envision tiltings. I envision tree roots and that kind of stuff.
And I think that's what the village can control. The village can control the acts of God. And snow.
But they plow. That, I mean, it's the way they were plowing is the way people were saying. I'm just bringing up what people have said to me as an issue. And I don't know, you know, that is something that the village does. I don't know whether we want to address that or not, but I'm just throwing it out there.
Is the village plowing the streets differently than they have in the past? Does anybody know?
I can't say.
It seems to be the
same. I've lived here for 45 years and it looks the same to me. Like every time I shovel my driveway, the plows come by, and that's just a virtue of, you know, getting as close to the curb so people can park and traffic can access. And I feel like there's nothing the village can do about that. You know, that they couldn't stop and back every truck up and try to make sure everybody's driver was clear after those three trucks come down the street. They could barely keep up with that. So, you know, and I understand that. And then I also don't think even, you know, younger, more nimble, I don't feel safe in the wintertime walking with the black ice and that as much as I would like to, you know, which is why there's indoor tracks at Loyola and Silver Sneakers and malls. And, you know, those months I avoid it. I don't think it's safe for anyone of any age to be out walking, you know, so much when there's really, really inclement weather before it really has a chance to cycle itself out. And, you know, we have expectations that all snow is going to be removed within 24 hours. Sometimes storms last 2 days. So I don't think that there's much that this survey is going to do to address issues of snow removal now. You know, we're not talking about like a snow removal program like Forest Park has, where they go and do all public sidewalks. But that's a massive financial undertaking, equipment, personnel, everything else.
And they have a better tax base than we do because of all the commercial and industrial there.
So. I think we had a really bad winter, and that might be fresh in people's minds where we had all that snow in a short period of time.
Right.
And on the task force line, we got a lot of calls about snow removal, and we tried to manage it. Sarah, you know this, you know, with volunteers going over and shoveling people out as much as possible, but it was really an unusual period. But I think that's still fresh in people's minds. But Jim, you're right. I mean, we can't even go out in that. You know, it doesn't matter what age it is, you are, it still presents a real hazard.
Albuquerque
sounds good, actually.
We're all going to Ron's house for the winter.
That's right. Just to get out of here for the winter.
This is snowballing into a serious discussion.
No pun intended there. So is Ron not coming? You sent him the email, right, Sarah?
Yeah, I sent him the Zoom link. But I know also say he had to leave at 7:30.
Yeah, he had to leave at 7:30 to go to O'Hara to pick up somebody.
Russ, can I just add, we'll have survey results, we'll have data. We can speak to the data and our recommendation or formal write-up. I do think there could be a place without speaking beyond the data that we collect from the survey where we as a committee who has thought about this, researched this for over a year now, we can have our own place to make recommendations based on what we learn and what our interpretation is and what the village may want to think about moving forward. And we can capture issues around safety, snow. I mean, these things that maybe aren't in the survey, there's nothing preventing us from planting seeds about ways to think differently about zoning, for example. I think there's still a place to include that.
Yeah, I don't think that our report is limited solely to the findings of the survey. The survey informs what we report and gives us some evidence of concern by people, but we're given, you know, the eight worlds, or what's the phrase again we use? The ARP uses
domain.
We're going to be, report will probably be more expansive than what just the survey discusses.
Right.
We have a portion that discusses the survey and gives the results for each question and the cross hatching that we do, but that's basically the a backup of the report, the data.
And at the end of the day too, once we get this, the analysis, the responses, besides making some recommendations, some of the recommendations may be, you should, village, still look at this and doing that, or exploring this and doing that. I mean, it's not just this one-time shot of what it could lead to other things for us to advise what the village should be following up with and looking at as well. So I wanted to add that in as well. So Ron, thank God you're back. So I didn't know. And we know you gotta have to leave at 7:30, but is there, since you were off, is there anything you wanna add before you go?
Yes, I don't know what's going on. We've got two Xfinity trucks in our driveway right now.
Okay.
So I'm on a hotspot with my phone and this doesn't seem to be working too well either.
Okay, all right.
The one thing I would add is that if we're going to add a few questions about modifying our homes, maybe we should say something like, are you not willing to modify your home? And that may be in that list of questions from 54 to 59, because in our case, we're not willing, we're not able to, there's nowhere to build. So I'll leave it at that. And you can't hear me anyway, can you?
No, we're here. Okay. People are listening and
I think you might have dropped off before everybody decided not to touch any of those questions.
Yeah, I think.
I apologize and I'll just drop off now because I'm gonna leave anyway, so.
Okay.
Thank you all so much.
Thanks,
right.
Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay. So going back in this respect, so trying to get a closure on these committee survey questions. Obviously, there was the parent one that got modified already. And do we need to do any additional review on our own, or meaning review as a group, or are we ready to say, hey, this is the final survey question?
And I'd say it's the final.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, I think it would be very prudent of us to take some time between now and the next meeting for us each individually go through the questions and just see if there's any small refinements that we could bring back to the group that would make the questions easier to understand.
I think an exercise in frustration. From my view, it's an exercise in frustration. It's a freeze version. It's gotta be a freeze version sometime, and it might as well be now because it's gone.
Well, there's no reason to do it now because we're not ready to send out a survey or anything. Let's, as a side thing, take half an hour or 40 minutes between now and the next meeting and see if, everything just seems just right, because we really haven't done that. And it's very hard to do it as a group. And we may, it may result in two or three small modifications that might make it easier to understand a question or remove, confusion on the part of a respondent. There's nothing, I'm just saying there's nothing to lose by doing that.
Okay, then let's try to do some parallel items here. Then assuming we do that, let's work on, I mean, Jim, you and I'll get you the name of that other proposals. We can start working on the budget. We can start working, meaning the items you talked about as well in preparation of preparing the budget. It's almost like, let's assume that this version is what we're gonna send out, but let's move towards the distribution plan and working towards that for the next meeting. Does that make sense? And if there's anybody here who wants to make some final changes on the questions, you can submit this. And I would appreciate if you can do it before the next meeting, so that maybe at the next meeting we can say, these were the final input comments from people so that we're ready to vote on yay or nay on any of those proposed changes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And okay. Any other comments, questions? I'm looking to see. Survey test questions. Okay. No. Any other comments or questions and or items for new business? At this point, no? Okay. All right. Okay then. Right now, our next meeting is scheduled for October the 13th. At this point, I don't know if that will be a Zoom meeting. I'm trying to think the governor's extension went to at least the end of September. If he extends it, then the Zoom meeting won't be a problem. But we're also on up in the air if he is or isn't. Maybe with the Delta variant, it might cause another extension, but at least the 13th of October will be our meeting, and 6 o'clock seems like the new time. And so what I don't know now is whether we'll have to be there in person or whether we can continue with Zoom, but we'll let you know as soon as we know. I think that we'll probably know at the end of, close to the end of September, around the 20th, 25th, around there, because the last extension was on August the 26th, I think. And he usually extends it for 30 days. So, but I'll look at that as well. But we'll know before the end of December whether he'll extend it. So, Dan, I saw your hand go up.
Yeah, I have an obligation, having been adopted by Bonnie Bray, to remind everyone that this Saturday will be the 20th anniversary lemonade on the block of Bonnie Bray between Chicago Avenue and Oak, between 3 and 6, I think. Right. And it's a wonderful opportunity to be outside and close to other people who you have no idea if they've been vaccinated or not or have COVID. Yeah. So please come, bring your donations and wear a mask.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you, Dan, for that reminder.
Rez, can I just very quickly, just like some of the to-dos for the next meeting, just to recap. So Jim, I think you were gonna get some budget items for the mailings and then the analysis, the preparation of the analysis. So I think I might have that someone's email from the Austin group, so I'll check and see if I do. And then if not, Rez, I might have to.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Sarah, if you can find that, great. If not, don't sweat over it. I'm sure I could find it. Just reach out to me.
And then Dan, I know you were gonna reach back out to your contact to find out what exactly we need, the document that we need to request. And then I'm happy to make that request from a village email account. That's fine. If you could get that information to me. And then Rez, I think we just need to button up that cover letter.
Correct. I will do that.
I'll send you, if you'd like, I'll send you purely as examples, not necessarily something to be totally emulated, but as examples, what letters we did with Naperville, so you can see the nature of the types of letters in the reminder postcard.
And Dan, when you do that, can you give me just a brief bullet of when, which letter was for the, like, number one, number two, and, you know, that type of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And those letters, you should be aware, they were, we produced them in a mail merge, respectively. We did everything in an actual database called FileMaker Pro. So the letters were individually, the names, someone's name was on it. It wasn't just dear resident, it had their name. And that's really important with these surveys, to get their name on the letter so it seems personal.
Okay. Okay.
That's easy to do.
Yeah, that'd be fine too.
I bet you know how to do mail merge and Word. Not as easy as it seems, especially when you use conditions. It's a challenge.
Okay, Sarah, are there any other items we got for to-dos on our to-do list?
I think that was it. And then everyone was just take some time to look over the survey questions as well and submit any final tweaks. Do we want a date on that, Russ?
I would prefer that, yes. If our meeting is on October the 13th, let's say, can we, Friday's October 1st, would that be good? Mm-hmm. Okay, October 1st.
Right.
Okay. All right. All right. If all is good then.
Yep.
I'll entertain a motion to adjourn and a second, and then a roll call.
I'll motion to adjourn.
Okay. Do you have a second, Sam?
I'll second.
Okay. Okay, roll call, please.
Okay, Ron Sherman left the meeting. Dan Lauber.
Yes.
Debbie Frederick.
Yes.
Jim Flanagan.
Yes.
Lydia Manning.
Yes.
Stop. Sorry to interrupt. I've got the name and phone number and email of the guy from the Northwest Austin Council that does the SPSS. Do you want me to send it to you, Sarah, or...
Yep, you'll and I forward it along to Jim. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So, thank you. Sorry to interrupt, but I figured it'd save you some time.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
We were on Barbara Merle.
Yes.
Okay. Helen Kwan.
Yes.
And Chairperson Vasquez.
Yes. Okay. And thank you all for attending, and I'll continue the effort here. So
thank you.
Good night.
Thank you, everybody. Be well.
Bye-bye.